Hi, it's Motzei Shabbos. This will be Saturday night. In other words, the next coming week is Parshas Mishpatim. And somebody asked me a question. I want to address it. So this is going to be sort of a continuation of what we're doing in terms of tefillah for Mishpachas Stefanski. Even though it was triggered by a question that somebody had on the last one, somebody wrote a thoughtful message to me. I was even willing to sponsor this, but I said that Tefillah's podcasts are all the property of Mishpachas Stefanski, thanks to their patronage. So, although I'm sure the Stefanskis are going to be busy with the Genozim auction tomorrow, but even though I usually don't want to do one on Saturday night, but I will do one now, and we'll talk about Tefillah in this regard. And what he asked me was, and I'm sure many other people think this way, some people are bothered by the angel business, like I mentioned before. And I get it. On the other hand, you see clearly throughout the history of Klal Yisrael, people like the angel stuff. So it's one of those things where yesh v'yesh. As I mentioned Shul today, it says, Mamlech is coining b'goy kadosh. Goy kadosh is not kadosh to you. Goy kadosh is a collective business. Some people are built this way and some people are built that way. And some people, when they read prayers that involve angels and things like that, it turns them on. And some people not. I get that. But if you want to understand our liturgy, it's a historical product. And I think it's very important to understand in general. This gives me an opportunity to speak about this in general, and then I'll address his specific point. When you get to the history of tefillah, I think we all know that originally there was no such thing as formal prayer, and then there was. But we have to distinguish between what Chazal put together, that's on the one hand, and what comes post-Chazal in Jewish history. The poets, the liturgical poets of Jewish history, some of whom were known by this appellation and some of them by others. Usually we would talk about them in general as paitanim. But you'd be surprised and perhaps even shocked how much of our davening, especially when it comes to holidays, things like this, is not from the Chazal part, but it's post-Chazal. That's just the way the history of tefillah goes. And let me put it this way. That shows a sign of a certain vitality. Get it? Again, there are different sensibilities involved here. One person might say, I'm a purist. Whatever Chazal put together, that's it. Anything beyond that is no good. Call him Moshe Gurea. The Rambam, I think, was a little bit like this because, you know, he has the attitude, like you find in the Gemara sometimes, which is, really, we shouldn't even say, Ho'el HaGodol HaGivra Noro. But since Chazal did it, okay. But to add to that, you can't. Remember, it's in the Gemara Megillah somewhere where the guy said, Ho'el HaGodol HaGivra Noro, HaGvaldik, HaMazing, HaThis, that, and the other. And they said, have you concluded, you know, all the praises of your creator? You can't even say anything and approximate the reality of it. So the ones that Anshing and Sigdol put together, that Chazal put together, all right. You know, we bow to them, but don't add to that. Me'idach Gisa, there's always been those poetic souls, and I mean this not in a funny way, and those religious souls, and again, I mean it not in a funny way, who have said, I need more. It's more than the regular liturgy. And they created the Piyutim literature, the Yotzeris, and all the rest of it, which is a very expansive field that only specialists are into, or weirdos. And if you don't believe, just Google somewhere, you know, history of Piyutim or things like this. There's Ofans, there's Yotzeros, there's Krovas, there's this, that, and the other. It's a whole, you know, department by itself. Not usually so well studied, except by, you know, those who really care about the real Yekis and so on and so on. I mean, you know, they care about the history of where these were composed and what circumstances. So understand that you'll have more angel, as far as I can think, you have more angelology in the post-Chazal stuff than in the Chazal stuff. I addressed in the last podcast the Chazal stuff, meaning in the Birchas Krishma, right? It's from the Gemara and all that. That you say, Hashem Ho'el HaMelech HaKul Mekal Malim Omach Shmaim Zeh Mizeh Menosim Shul Zeh Zeh, etc., etc., which is based off the Haftorah that we did today in Yeshayo chapter 7, where he sees God sitting on a throne surrounded by angels with six wings and all the rest of it. So in other words, it's in the Torah Shebiksav. You get it? It's not considered some esoteric mystery, even though it is, but we've never treated it like the way we treat mice and recover or anything like that. So, you know, cool your jets. It's okay to speak in God in these terms as long as you pinch yourself and realize it's not literal. You know what I'm saying? It's not literal. Me'idach Gisa, there has always been a problem throughout Jewish history even Chazal, that if you explore this subject a little too much, you get wrapped up in it, it could possibly lead you to false theological conclusions. I get that. And it's funny because I'm just thinking out loud. We have from time of Chazal, I think, something called the Hecholos literature, the Pirkei Hecholos and things like that, in which you have elaborate descriptions of heaven, and it's like these video games that the object is to get inside the castle, and you got to get past this guard that could zap you and that guard and so on and so forth, and they're angels, you see. Now, are they literally angels and so on? Is it really a physical castle? No. Is it all baloney, imagination? No. Some such a thing sort of exists, but in kind of a metaphysical and spiritual realm. And in the Hecholos, there's great descriptions of it. The Nigla aspect of this is the famous story in the Gemara about the four people went into the Pardes. Who was Rabbi Kiva and Elisha ben Avuya and Ben Zoma and Ben Azai, right? That's four great people. Tanaim, okay, you don't need me to tell you that. And yet, three emerged from the experience messed up. One went crazy, one died, I think. And most interestingly, Elisha ben Avuya got screwed up theologically because he saw the different angel up there. And however you read that Gemara, he came out no longer believing in a single God, but there are different Rishus up there. In other words, he made the leap, which you're not supposed to do, between understanding the angel business in heaven on the one hand, and they did this in a mental journey. It's a joint mental journey. It's quite a story, right? The people went to the Pardes, they didn't physically walk anywhere. They were like sitting in their rooms. I don't even know, maybe they're in one room. Maybe they were in four different places and they did it at the same time. It seems like it's a joint effort. I brought Nichnus apart, you know what I mean? But they didn't go into any orchard. They went in some kind of mental thing. So it's a mental journey in which you sort of direct your mind in certain directions. It's not easy to do. Not for us today who have flabby mental muscles. Unless you start taking, meditation courses. You know, read the Ari Kaplan books on Jewish meditation, all that business. You know, believe me, it's hard to do. And these are Tanaim who want to take it to get closer to Hashem, get in the Shemayim, however you understand that term. But that's the point. They're trying to get beyond the point of however you understand that term. And so it was a heavy mental journey. If it says one of them, the brain messed up and the other one died and all that, it could be that they overloaded the mind. It's very possible they overloaded the mind. I wasn't there, and I don't know of it. I never experienced it. But the Gemara tells you the story, and it's in the Nigla. It's not in the Zohar or anything like that. I mean, it's not in Pirkei Cholos. It's in a Talmudic passage. So as they say today, it's in the Daf Yomi. You know, so that means you're supposed to realize that. But it also points out the dangers of the angelology, the Malachim business, because he sees Matatra, and he figures that Matatra is a Shuspif Neyatzmo, and so on and so forth. Right? And the story is crazy because, in other words, then they punish Matatron and so on and so forth. But, in other words, it's hard to interpret for you and I. But these are things that the human being who is capable of entering the metaphysical realm, but it's not easy and it's dangerous, that great minds want to go. Right? That's where great minds want to go. Rabbi Kiva is the only one that was Nichnas B'Shalom, B'Yatzah B'Shalom, so it can be done. But it ain't for everybody, that's for sure. Now, the reason I mention this is this is pre-Piyutim. This is the time of Chazal. I just told you a story from the Tanoim, okay? So if we find davening things in Tanoim and Amoraim, which we consider a class by itself, so if they have Malachim in there, as you do in the Birchas Krishma, Halo Davarhod. However, once you finish the period of the Talmud and you go to the post-Talmudic period, which in Israel started earlier than in Babylonia, the Talmudic period ends in the 4th century in Israel and doesn't end till the late, 5th century, around the very, very early 6th century in Babel. That has to do with history and knowing that the Middle Ages begins in one place in the Roman Empire and another place in the Sasanian Persian Empire. And the Talmud, of course, was composed in two different places. I don't go into all that. But the Elisha ben Avuya story, putting aside, you start to have the famous poets, as far as I know, in Roman Palestine. either the Roman Empire or the Byzantine Empire, East Roman Empire. And these are the great people that we don't even realize that we're doing their stuff all the time. Rabbi Elazar Kaliri, of course, people heard of. Yanai, that sort of thing. So they are paitanim. So there's no holds barred. So they, they're great people, of course, and I'm not belittling them, but although David Ezra kind of like, belittles Blazer Kaliri, but then again, people belittle Ibn Ezra, so that's a whole parasha by itself. But they used, their Torah knowledge on the one hand, and their poetical imagination on the other, and there develops and becomes a beloved part of the liturgy in many places, especially in the Middle Ages. Whole things involving with Malachim. Get over it. You understand? Now, then I'll just, right off the top of my head, before I even think any farther, Akdamas, which is a beloved poem, it's gained universal thing. It's from the time of Rashi in the Middle Ages. And you got all about, it's a whole long part in the, and it's in the Shavuos of Matan Torah. So actually in Shavuos, you shouldn't be, talk from one point of view, you should only talk about Hashem, nothing else. Today's Parshas Yisro we did. It should only be Hashem give the Torah, not Hashem and the angels. And when you get to the, Akdamas, he's got a lot about the angels in there. He doesn't say that they gave us the Torah, but it's a big preoccupation with the Malachim over there, in the Aramaic. And when you get to, how would I put it? The Piyutim Rosh Hashanah. In fact, there's a whole genre of Piyutim from the Byzantine Empire for the next 1,000 years and throughout the Middle Ages called Ofans, right? Because Ofani Machai Sakodish Barashkal and Misasim Masrofim. That's already from Kedusha, but I'm saying it used to be, and maybe you say it in your shul, I doubt it, but it could be, especially Rosh Hashanah and Kippur time, when you get to Eshem Moel and Melcha Gadol Vanura Kibba Neruhu, after Kadosh Kadosh Ganaiswas Melchart's Quoto, then there's a whole thing. I think even in my shoulder is one day saying Yom Kippur. And it's all about the angels. You understand? And it could be cool. And the greatest of the poets did ofans, meaning they did poems about the ofani v'chayis ha-kodesh, b'rash galom, misnasim, masrafim, that sort of thing. My personal favorite is from Moshe ben Ezra, simply because of the cadence. And again, don't freak out over the theology, because it's not necessarily meant to be taken literally. On the other hand, it is expected to evoke. Here's the one from Moshe ibn Ezra, who's one of the great poets. This is not Avraham ibn Ezra, who is also a great poet. He wrote the Ibn Ezra and the Chumash. This relative is Moshe ibn Ezra from the golden age of Spanish poetry. I've always wanted to do a series on the Sephardi poetry, but I can't find anybody who wants to back that. The only interest in Sephardi rabbis. But here's the famous Ofan from Moshe ibn Ezra. So notice he just says, Hashem el hamel ha-godol ha-gibra norahu, whatever you say over there. And then they do, now listen, it rhymes perfectly. Malachim, mamlechim, maritzim, b'chol peyot, magdishim, marishim, margishim, barov chuot, noraim, v'ein nerim, niflaim, v'niflaot, umrim, kadosh, 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 adon notivot. You have to say it that way. So the cadence works out, and the rhyme and everything comes together. Shmo la'ad, barov ra'ad, b'ein mahen ya'ar ritzun, sh'on srafim, barov afim, kabrakim, yerod seitzun, sh'olim zeh, rishus mizeh, l'hagdishel b'mo ra'ot, omarim, kadosh, 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 adon notivot, hamon edim, mar edim, breg gishya'ar ritzun el, hamul osam, kedush osam, b'eis shilush kedush osel, b'kol ra'am, barov na'am, b'kol mare'el l'hit ra'ot, omri kadosh, 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 adon notivot. I mean, you could do, Mordechai ben David, one of these guys could do this now. You understand? And I'm sure, and I don't mean this to be funny, if this is sung correctly, especially in a Sephardi synagogue from, the Middle Ages, the place was rocking. You understand? Because it's just a great poem. And it gets you in the mood. And it turns just a dry, into something like a rock concert. It doesn't mean, he didn't add anything in terms of our knowledge of the Malachim in heaven, if you listen at all to the words I just read. He's just poetically evoking it, but using what I would say word candy, you know, language as a poetical delight to evoke this the scene in Shemayim Magdishim Mamlichim Rol Priyot. So he didn't mean, you know, to get philosophical or any of that kind of stuff. But he's giving you an ofan, and there are lots of others. There's a lot of Yekesh ofans and all this sort of thing. My friends can tell them to you, those who are interested. We do this to a certain degree in Kedusha also, right? In Kedusha, you know, but much less. Because there you're just evoking the Shayahu business. You know what I mean? And you know, and the Kesser is the same thing. The idea being, you're just evoking the scene from Yeshayo, and then a little bit later in the Kedusha from the other one, from Yecheskel, Baruch Kvod Hashem Imkomo. So it was a rather sparse and spare, and they go back to Chazal. When you get past that to the Middle Ages, you can't go and it's like saying, oh, don't say Shalom Aleichem, which I know some people don't. Or Baruchun Yisholm, but you know, you get the idea, right? By the way, I was at a Shebruch, some Sephardim told me they had an extra thing to Shalom Aleichem, Shavna or something like that, I don't know, which really makes it, you know, like the angels are present. But listen, the Gemara says two Malachim accompany you home, right? Now, what do you want, just dismiss that? Or do you want to embrace it? But don't say, you know, their angels are flapping in my living room or something like that. You take it for how it's supposed to be. Now, this guy who wrote to me said he was bothered by what you say in Tfilas Geshem, because off bri, you know. In other words, but he read it wrong. There's a pasuk in Eov, basically, that mentions off bri. And it's different from Mefarshim trying to explain, you know, what's going on over there. I mean, you know, that's basically what it is. And some say it's an angel that is connected with giving rain. And others say it's a meteorological sort of thing. Nebuchadnezzar, not surprisingly. But the point is that Elazar Kaliri, who composed all the piyutim for the various holidays, so when it comes to Tfilas Geshen, you know, you know, Tomas Shmini Atzeres. So he goes with the angel idea, but the person who wrote to me said, I guess you're praying to the angel over there. Not really. You have to read the words. And what you're really doing is you're praying to Hashem to activate this angel. Right? What does God need, to activate any angel whatsoever? According to the angelology system, it's a way of saying how God runs the world. Believe me, when you get to the Pardes Ramona Moshe Cordovero, I read you once last year when we did some of the Kabbalah stuff, a little bit, a tiny bit. It's all down to this Malach is in charge of this room and that Malach is in charge of that room. I'm serious. And this one takes care of the sinners and this one takes care of the good ones. And this one executes this judgment over here. And this one is in charge of this room. Now, you know, in heaven and hell, there are no rooms exactly the way we have physical rooms. But nevertheless, we understand it's a certain type of compartment. Does it mean literally there's an angel in charge of it? I don't know. You know, it could be yes, could be no. I imagine if you ask the Rambam, he'll say just expression. Of course, the Rambam doesn't hold the Kabbalah altogether, or at least as far as we know. But even if, let me put it this way. The Rambam knew, but the Piyutim, okay? He wasn't crazy about Piyutim at all, for obvious reasons. I mean, he doesn't like the angelology and all the rest of it. He does not like it. And sometimes he criticizes the Piyutim in his writings for this reason or for that reason. But nevertheless, let me put it this way. If you ask me, if the Rambam were Rambam's father and their shul in Cordoba, did they say this Piyut or that Piyut or something like this, like the one I just read you, Malachim, Mamlachim, Kol Piyut, I bet you they did. You know? Maybe I'm wrong, but I bet you they did. So when you get to Af Pri, it's really an Afbri Utas Shem Sar Mutter, that the name Afbri, says the Paiton, is Utas, you know, is designated as the Sar Mutter. Well, that's what, you know, that's one way of reading it in Eov, right? He's the Sar Mutter. What do you mean Sar Mutter? The angel in charge of the rain. So when you pray to God, not to the angel, right? Is a free uta shem sar motor lahaviv lahanin laharik lahamter, to bring clouds and anonim laharik lahamter, and to bring the rain down, empty the clouds and bring down the rain. Mayim im bom gil atar, and it's all kind of rains that it can put down on the earth. Laval yatsu benishim shtar amutzim gonon bom sholim motor. So you're not davening to the angel, although I can understand, because in Hebrew is a little bit difficult, that the average person, when he reads it, sounds like you're talking to the Malach. I get it. But the Kaliri doesn't cross that line. You see what I'm saying? He doesn't say that. It's not like Machnisu Rachem, Machnisu Rachaminu Lefnei Malach Machem Lachem, or however it goes over there. That's a little bit different. Because there you're talking to the angels. Or when you say Barchuni Lashon, Malki Lashon, you're kind of addressing the angels. When the formal piyutim of the great poets, they do get, especially in the Ashkenazic poetry of the Middle Ages, they do get very heavy into the Malachim and all that kind of stuff. But not that you ask, you petition an angel, right? You petition God to activate an angel. That's a different thing altogether, right? You petition God to activate an angel. The Gemara is full of that sort of talk, right? I mean, that's how it goes. Now, sometimes the Gemara has these agadatos. I mean, let's put it this way. We do have a Jewish traditions of the fallen angel and the angel that rebelled against God and all that kind of business. The Christians took it farther, of course. But it's not in the davening. You know what I'm saying? No, it's never been part of the liturgy. So it helps the person out there, poetically, and I'm not saying it's a put-down, have a feeling for a higher realm, a different realm, a transcendent realm. Well, I mean, that we believe, you know, not necessarily with the vivid descriptions. You know, it's not exactly identical with that, but nothing can be identical with that. As the Rambam puts it so famously, we don't know what the metaphysical is like because you've never seen it. Remember, he says, just like a person who was born blind can't cop what it's like to have sight and vice versa. You can't understand what a world totally spiritual. I mean, how are they going to figure that out? So that's what I would say. The don't be surprised if there's a lot of Malach stuff that we end up in the liturgy, usually in the post-Chazal stuff, right? Which means your piyutim, your yanta of davening, you know, the extra things. Now a lot of shuls don't say piyutim. I'm well aware of that. My shul still does, but you know, a moderate amount. They don't say, we're not yekis. They don't do the super duper heavy stuff. It's no so smart. So you know. They say, I would say, usually a moderate dollop on piyutim when it comes to Shal Shagom, except for last days of Pesach and for Shavuos. Then, bummer. Then it's a long business because you do the whole Oz Yashir, and later, I mean, it's long, and then on Shavuos, you do the whole Aseres Adibras. You know, poetics like Beowulf, it's like, it goes on and on. Right? But we do it. You know, you do it. But not on Sukkot. And not on most of Pesach. You know what I mean? No, it's not so bad, as they say over here. You know, don't be surprised if you see these sorts of things. That's all I just wanted to bring out. So I think, while I do understand, first of all, I think it's great that somebody listened enough to the podcast to be stirred by this. Right? That's actually what Mishpacha Stefanski wants. People think about, you know, what their davening is. I mean, you know, that I know. So that's great. But it's not, you know, as theologically offensive, shall we put it this way, philosophically offensive, as people imagine at first glance. At least that's my impression. I'm not the world's expert on piyutim. I just know a little bit more than someone else. And that's how I see it. Anyway, once again, as always, I'm starting this early. And as I said before, we always do the Tefillah podcast for Mishpachas Stefanski, and I do tip my hat to our responder who wrote to me about this. I'm impressed that people are thoughtful on the subject. And with that, I wish you a good week.